And you're listening to radio station WBAI. The time is 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday night. Time once again for country music. No, only kidding. Off the hook time. Everybody, the program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. And no country music tonight. That was only last week. Joined tonight by Not Kevin.
Hello.
Dot Rhett.
Hello.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Great Frequency. Say hi.
Hey there.
And Voltaire.
Hi.
And down in Philadelphia, Bernie S.
Happy Passover.
Yes, and well, it hasn't started yet, but we had quite a reaction, didn't we, to all the shenanigans of last week. Any highlights leap out at you, Bernie? What we did?
The whole thing leapt out at me. It was just I had trouble staying still to that country beat music.
Yeah, and we have our friend Laszlo to thank for putting that together. Basically, for those of you who didn't tune in, last week was April 1st, and we started the whole thing off with a big countdown. Not really a countdown, sort of like a goodbye. What the last broadcast of WBAI might sound like if that dark day ever were to happen, and closing off with Redemption Song by Bob Marley, and then Silence, and then Static, and then all of a sudden a new air signal. A countdown and this super hyped up sound saying country music has returned to New York City. New York City just got a little southern, and you're at the beginning of a 10,000 song marathon.
Commercial free.
We're trying to think of the thing that would be the biggest form of hell to our listeners, and that came up. And then we just pieced together four straight songs. People were saying, after one song, one song's a joke, two songs, okay, not so funny, three songs, hey, what the hell's going on here? And yeah, that was the point, to get people to realize this is what could happen. This is what could happen to this frequency. This is what could happen any time. And then we couldn't quite find our way back. We kept flashing into different times and dimensions and things like that. And all of a sudden, we were doing a sports show. And then we flashed again, and we were doing some kind of regular technical show. Except the stories were all kind of crazy, except not that crazy, kind of believable. And then finally we flashed into our right time zone and right the period of conversation and all that, and by then it was too late. We were out of time, but not out of space.
It was a harrowing journey.
It was, and we got quite a bit of feedback. So some people liked it, some people hated it, some people thought it wasn't funny to pretend that the station had gone country. But you know what? I think we made a serious point here that you have a powerful station in the middle of New York City. Believe me, if Pacifica sold the station, then yeah, it would be country music, or it would be something else. It would be something like all the other stations. It's exactly the kind of thing that could happen.
I don't think we have a country station, so I think that that would be perfect for this.
We don't have a country station in New York. We have what's known as HD2 stations or whatever. I think one station broadcast in HD. And Bernie, maybe you could explain that to us. Does that mean a high-definition radio? What exactly is that HD business?
Well, HD is a trade name. It doesn't really mean anything. It's not an acronym, but a lot of people think it means high-definition, but in fact, the digital audio on these HD radio stations is inferior to the analog audio you're hearing right now. It's lower fidelity. But you can have a couple of sidebands like HD1 and HD2 on this station. If it were an HD station, you get your regular analog or the digital. But they all sound worse, believe me.
Now, have you actually heard them?
Oh, yeah. I've borrowed someone's HD radio, and you get this weird picket fencing effect where it's sort of a hybrid signal. You get the analog and the digital broadcast on the same carrier, and but when the bit rate gets too error prone, the radio will automatically switch to analog, and it switches in and out between analog and digital, and it just sounds awful. And I'm sure anybody listening has an HD radio, listens to other stations that are HD, and experiences weird effect. But I don't think it's going to catch on, because nobody wants to spend $100 for a radio. Not that people are even buying a lot of radios anymore.
Right.
But it's just not catching on, and it costs like $100,000 for a radio station to get it, and you have to pay licensing fees to use the proprietary technology and
all that. Yeah, sounds like things we used to dot red.
Bernie, do you know if it's a standard feature for the receivers to switch between analog and digital?
Most of the HD radios do that as a standard feature. You can switch it in and out. You know, like there's some radios you can regular stereo radios you can just press the mono button to put it in mono mode. But there's HD radios you can say, all right, switch back and forth. But yeah, you could have it just stay on analog or stay on digital, but if you told to stay on digital, when the signal drops down below a certain strength, it'll just drop out. It's like a cliff effect. You just lose all the audio, kind of like the digital TV signals. You have a decent picture, and then bang, it disappears completely. There's no gray area.
Interesting. Okay, we have an interesting announcement here for people that are looking for the new edition of the Best of 2600 book. This is something that we heard about through our friends over at Wiley. Apparently, there are all these signed copies of the Best of 2600, the Ultimate Edition, whatever, the new edition that has the CD in it and all the covers and all kinds of added features.
The poster.
The poster in there, the full-color poster. Now, you ordinarily, there's a place called Micro Center that has these. I know, because I had to sign a whole bunch of them. It was an afternoon of fun. But only the Micro Center, I think, in Columbus, Ohio, has these. But they told us today that if you go to microcenter.com and enter these digits, this special code, 026666, enter that in the search bar, then it'll magically pop up, and you can actually get a signed edition yourself. So just wanted to pass that along, microcenter.com. Not going to be available forever, but they are available in that way. So, yeah, exciting. Do it after the show. People are trying to leave to do it now. No, do it after the show, if they're already still around. Okay, so, yeah, you hear about this case, though? This is funny. I was listening to this before, actually. There's this kid who apparently had robbed a car, stolen something out of a car, and he pocket-called 911 and basically had a whole big long conversation with some friends of his where he basically confessed to the entire thing, talked about how it was hard for him. He said it was bolted down. I had to rip it out. He's heard saying it took all my energy to lift it out of the car. His friends seemed to be unimpressed with what may only be a stolen Cricket phone, lamenting that it's not a BlackBerry. Despite long interludes of silence or muddied, unintelligible voices, the cops continued to eavesdrop. In fact, they recorded the whole thing, and you can hear it online. It's being passed around all over the place. It goes about 12 minutes, and it's only about 7 minutes in that you can actually hear him really clearly saying what it was he did. Well, the cops used cell phone signal triangulation with help from the phone company to find out where this kid was and send a squad car over to where he was located. And it's really kind of funny, I guess, but also it's kind of serious. Bernie, did they overstep their legal rights in tracking him down this way?
It's a really interesting legal question, and I'm sure his lawyer, if he's sharp, will try to challenge this as a confession that was not meant to be overheard. But, I mean, he did call 911 just inadvertently. You know, it happened to probably all of us. You put your phone in your pocket, and, you know, it presses up against your butt and presses some buttons and, mm-hmm. and calls somebody, and people get to hear you talking to people, and you don't even know they're hearing it.
I get that all the time. People actually have me on speed dial as 2600 sometimes, and that, of course, makes it the first one in the list. So many times phones just call the first number in the phone book. And, you know, I, there are people that if I see them on caller ID, I know they're not calling me because I haven't talked to them in 5 years. But I know that I'm going to hear all about their lives as they walk around the East Village or something like that. And what do? I call them back and say, hey, you know what? Stop calling me. I know you don't think you're calling me, but you are calling me. So, please, erase me from your phone. You know, I just basically replace their name with do not answer. Because that way when it rings on the phone, I don't ever answer it. I just listen to voicemail later and see if they say anything incriminating.
I've gotten voicemail messages like that, too, where mm-hmm. it's just like somebody's windshield wipers for 15 minutes or something.
Uh-huh. What was amazing here was that the cops kept on the line. They kept saying 911 emergency. I guess they have to stay on because if someone's fallen and they can't get up, they need to be able to get address information or something like that, right?
I don't think the evidence will be suppressed. I think the evidence will be admitted and they will be able to use that evidence against him.
I think he's probably gonna plead to something.
Especially since when they found him, he still had the stolen radio in his hand. So that was kind of hard.
He actually, at the end of the conversation, he actually talked to them and said, oh, I'm sorry, my phone must have called you by accident. apparently he wasn't tipped off that they were on the way for him. Not Kevin.
Now, would this violate the one-party consent rule of recording?
Well, it is the police. They record everything. They always record 911 calls.
But if you inadvertently called them, he didn't give consent.
I don't know if that's true.
Well, it also depends on the state, so it might not even be a one-party.
I think if you call 911, it doesn't matter whether you give consent or not. Anything you say is going to be recorded and used against you if it's of criminal intent or something like that.
If someone the kid was talking to said something incriminating, that person might have a case for saying that he had a reasonable expectation of privacy. But the kid who actually made the call, even though he made it inadvertently, I don't think his speech will be suppressed as evidence.
Well, it is an interesting case, and we'll see where that goes. Wow, the embarrassment, though. Imagine that. An inadvertent phone call to the cops. Wow. Now, as far as the triangulation, I guess if you call the cops with 911 on a cell phone and you need their help but you haven't told them where you are, how does that work exactly? Do they use triangulation as a rule to find out where you are?
It depends on the cell phone. Most cell phones now have a GPS global positioning system receiver chip built into it, and so it picks up a satellite signal and the orbiting military satellites that send coordinates that triangulate your coordinates, and then your coordinates are transmitted along with your cellular signal to the cellular office. If your phone is an older one, they can do it by triangulation between the towers that your cell phone is between two or three towers. They can figure out roughly where you are, probably within a couple hundred yards. But if it's the newer phone, they can tell you with pretty good accuracy where you are, unless you're in a building or something, and your phone can't see the GPS satellites, in which case it has to do the triangulation. But apparently it was good enough for them to find this kid. And I was hardly an emergency, but, you know, I could spend all this time calling the phone company and for a stolen radio. I think
how long did it take before they actually caught up with them? I mean, it didn't sound like they spent that much. They just spent time listening on the phone. I guess they figured at that point they invested enough time in it, might as well, you know, capture somebody for admitting something on the phone. It's an interesting case that you'll always remember.
This was one of the big selling points for this technology was there was a few cases where someone was kidnapped and thrown into the trunk of a car.
Yeah, I saw that on 24.
calling 911. Right. No, this actually did happen to a handful of people.
Yeah, it's based on reality.
But you know, hardly enough to build a whole infrastructure across the country to solve, I guess. But in any case, they would call 911 from the trunk of the car, but they wouldn't know where they were because they're in a dark trunk somewhere.
Right.
But and then the 911 people would have no idea where these people were, and it'd be very frustrating. And sometimes the people end up getting killed, or raped, or worse.
Mm-hmm.
But now with this technology, they can have a pretty good idea of where you are. Now, it also is a very handy thing because now law enforcement and other government agencies can literally tell where everybody is all the time. As long as your phone is on, you don't even have to be making a call.
Mm-hmm.
They can ping your, we did a demonstration a few months ago last year where we called Sprint's corporate security department, where it had a menu where law enforcement officers can just put in a phone number and get the coordinates for where you're located. Very scary. So everybody's wearing tracking devices now, and law enforcement can tell where any of us are at any moment in time. And eavesdrop.
Even if we turn the phone off, they're going to be able to do this.
No, if the phone is powered off,
okay.
It cannot. The actually safest way. Some phones, when you turn them off, they're not really off either. They're still they still could be receiving the signal and could be pinged.
Uh-huh.
So if you really want to be totally safe, take the battery out, and that's for sure not going to be tracking you.
Right. Or if you really want to be safe, leave the phone at home or at somebody else's home.
Or put it in somebody else's car so that then the police go on a wild goose chase.
Yeah, that's always fun, too. Now, Dot Red, you have a really cool phone. You just got this phone. It's an Android phone.
Yes, it is.
But it's not a robot or anything like that. It's actual. Tell us what.
Actually, it is. It's going to uprise.
We were in a cafe the other night, and you issued a command to this phone, and it was able to tell us pretty much where we were just by you asking where we were. Can it do that now? Can it tell us where we are right now? We're inside a building. So
yes, we are inside a building.
It basically looks for cell signals and figures out from the cell signals.
I, by default, have the GPS turned off to save the battery, so it just uses triangulation. Usually gets it right within a block or so.
Uh-huh. Of course, Android phones aren't the only phones that can do that. Lots of phones have that capability, but this is one.
iPhones can do that.
Sorry?
The iPhone can do that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't. The iPhone, I don't think, has GPS built into it, but it can figure out through AT&T's network which cell site it's closest to and give you a rough idea, like Dot Red said, within a block or two.
Now, cell phone triangulation doesn't always work very well. Actually, just earlier today, it told me by cell phone triangulation I was in the middle of the water.
Really?
Yeah.
And you weren't.
Maybe not with the phone. The future and global warming catastrophe in New York.
Yeah, maybe it was a cynical statement that it was making.
Do you guys find you need a phone to tell you whether or not you're inside a building?
Yes, I do.
Depends what kind of day we're having. Well, you know, I still have the same clunky phones that it takes 10 seconds for a message to show up when I'm reading them, and it's time for me to upgrade to something better. I realize that. But the thing is, you know, I'd like to have something like an iPhone but be able to choose my company. I'd like to be able to use T-Mobile or AT&T. Same thing with the Android phone. Now, I happen to have T-Mobile now, so I'm not really in the mood to switch to a different company, especially since I've been with T-Mobile since the last century. And whenever you call them, they always kind of sound shocked, and you get this immediate respect because you're one of the early customers, and you've been there since they were called OmniPoint, which is two phone companies ago. So I don't want to give that up and become a new customer of another company. And Bernie, I think you still have that status with Sprint, don't you?
Yeah, they're shocked that I've been with them for like 12 years plus.
I was one of the first
subscribers in Philadelphia,
uh-huh.
And they sometimes look at my account records and like, oh my gosh, you've been with us forever.
With the service we offer, how is that possible?
Yeah, exactly. It's just sort of a love-hate relationship. I just like to track their demise, which I think all the cell phone companies. The only cell phone company that's doing really well right now is Metro PCS. It's one of these prepaid phone companies. They're stealing customers from all the other carriers because they have this like $50 a month unlimited everything deal, which is more competitive than the others, but they have a limited network, too. The whole cell phone market is saturated now. Everybody has a cell phone pretty much. Everybody who wants a cell phone pretty much has one now.
So yeah, but now you got to get the new version. You got to get the upgrade.
Yeah, but I mean, as all the companies, there's not the number of cell phone users is not growing. So these companies, their market share isn't growing much unless they steal customers from another carrier. It's not like there's new customers that are appearing in large levels like used to for the past few years. Like, yeah, I want to get one of those cell phones. They're pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, everybody who's going to need one pretty much has one, or they want to upgrade, but they generally stay with the same company.
Well, children, infants, you know, all kinds of people that don't necessarily have them yet might find a use for them, a way of tracking people, a way of keeping track of where certain people are. Maybe you want two. Maybe you want a second one as a backup. I have two. I have Verizon and I have T-Mobile. In fact, okay, this is something that kind of sucks for me. I'm going away starting tomorrow, actually. I'm I'm going up through Montreal. Smart car needs service. Got to go up to Canada. And then from there, I'm going all the way out to Wisconsin. I'm not sure how I'm going to do this yet. I might drive in the northern part of Quebec and Ontario and then come down into Wisconsin. The thing is, while I'm driving in Canada, there's no real plan that works for phones, for cell phones. It's really pretty expensive to make calls, to receive calls, even to text message. And I can't believe that I can get better deals over in Europe by having foreign SIMs and things like that. If anyone knows of a decent plan for either T-Mobile or Verizon in Canada, please forward that to oth@2600.com. And if anybody knows of anything interesting to see along the way between Montreal and Wisconsin, I'd also like to know about that. But actually, this all sort of revolves around the fact that I'm going to be able to make it to Nauticon in Cleveland, not this weekend coming up, but the one after that. And I believe, Bernie, you'll be there too.
Yes, and I think Rob is going, and Leo, and a bunch of other friends are going. A
whole bunch of people are coming from New York, so it'd be kind of cool to see you guys there. And we had Froggy from Nauticon on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about that particular hacker conference and how much fun it's going to be, and hopefully we'll see a bunch of you out there. It takes place in Cleveland the weekend of what, the 17th or the 19th?
That's right. It's actually, the festivities start Thursday, like a preview Thursday night, and it goes all day Friday, all day Saturday until about 3 o'clock on Sunday. And one of the new things about this Nauticon is there'll be a whole room with spaces dedicated to various hacker spaces around the country. NYC Resistor is going to be there, the hacker space that Mitch is associated with in San Francisco, the name escapes me right now, is going to have a space there, I believe. The Hactory in Philadelphia is going to have a space there, just sort of showing off some of the stuff they've been working on and give out information and trade ideas. So there's so many more hacker spaces this year than there were just a year ago that it's just good to get all these people together and exchange ideas about what works for your group.
And in the new issue of 2600 Magazine, which is just arriving on newsstands and in subscribers' mailboxes, you will see a page devoted to all the hackerspaces in this particular hemisphere. And it's that way you can wander around town, 2600 in hand, and find one that's near you. And that list is going to grow. This is going to get bigger and bigger. We'll need more pages.
It's also hackerspaces.org.
Yeah. Hackerspaces.org, if you're online, yes. Go there and get all kinds of that. They have all kinds of different ones there, ones that are in vans and things like that.
Ones that have fallen apart 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. We basically, we sort of narrowed it down to the ones that actually exist, that have addresses, that want people to come there and aren't secret and things like that. Okay, so that'll be fun. Canada, Nauticon, Wisconsin, Ohio. Yeah. Fun thing is, I got to drive back to Montreal after Nauticon to get the smart car and drive back here. It's crazy, but, you know, nobody will service a Canadian car in this country, so occasionally it's necessary. All right. This is an interesting story that we also got. This is courtesy of the BBC. The government in Thailand has set up a special website urging people to inform on anyone criticizing the monarchy. And this is something that I know our listeners can help out with. If you know somebody who's criticizing the Thai monarchy, you can do some good and report them or report their website, and that way the people of Thailand don't have to be subjected to it. It's established an Internet Security Center to coordinate the blocking of websites deemed offensive to the monarchy, and on the first day of operation, the center banned nearly 5,000 websites. Yeah, 5,000. The Ministry of Information had already blocked many thousands of sites, but that work is now being accelerated by the new center. For all the many other challenges confronting the new government in Thailand, it has made protecting the image of the monarchy one of its highest priorities. Internet users are being urged to show their loyalty to the king by contributing to a new website. You ready? It's protecttheking.net. That's right, protecttheking.net. It's been set up by a parliamentary committee, and on the site's front page, it's described as a means for Thai people to show their loyalty to the king by protecting him from what it calls misunderstandings about him. It calls on all citizens to inform on anyone suspected of insulting or criticizing the monarchy. The site has managed to block 4,818 websites in its first 24 hours of operation. The military apparently is concerned about growing anti-monarchy sentiment, particularly among supporters of the ousted prime minister. Interesting times. And I guess, you know, we can access that site here, can't we?
I tried the other day, but I could not. When the story came out a couple of days ago, I tried to access it because I wanted to say on the site that when I was in Thailand, I saw billboards and pictures of the king everywhere, and his ears stick out a whole lot, and he looks really ridiculous. And well, I
wait a minute, that's criticism. That's why you can't reach the site, because that's criticism, Bernie. You're blocked now.
I just wanted to sort of post that note myself on their website as the. It's like I just wanted to say that these billboards and posters of the king everywhere in Thailand make him look ridiculous.
Yeah, well, they cut you off at the pass, Bernie, because you were going to say something to offend them, and they wouldn't let you. Not Kevin.
No, China's been doing the same thing for a while now, except they're throwing people they catch in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any news of Thailand doing the same thing?
I imagine they might. I mean, if I was running a country like that and that was my goal to find people that were criticizing the monarchy, yeah, you'd come after them, sure. Makes sense. But my impression is that they're blocking sites everywhere, not just in Thailand, any site that criticizes the monarchy. Robin.
Yeah, what I happened to notice was they not only got protecttheking.net, but they also bought up the .com and .org domains, so they got those they got the big three.
Oh, they have all of them then?
They have all of them.
Okay.
And I'm wondering why they would use the generic domains instead of maybe something. What's Thailand's domain?
.th.
.th.
Yeah.
But for other patriotic ties, I think there's another way to help out the country by adding fake stuff to fake complaints and stuff. It's kind of like a DDoS attack. Just go on the website and put in anything that you want to waste their time, I guess.
Well, that's what people did after Tiananmen Square. They faxed China over and over again with all kinds of lists of people that they were supposed to investigate and turn in, except they didn't exist. There was bad information, and it just wasted a lot of time, supposedly. That's how the story goes.
Hint, hint.
Yes.
I'm just amazed they even got those domains. I kind of would have figured they already would have been taken
up. Who else would have protecttheking.net?
I don't know. Maybe some fans of some king in some other country.
Uh-huh.
These domains have been around for quite some time.
Well, you just have to come up with a phrase, you know, and it's not necessarily the best phrase that comes up with a winning combination. Like, for instance, you know, eBay could have just as easily been called something else.
Protect the auctions.
Yeah, it just happened. Well, yeah, it happened to be something that was available, easy to remember. Flickr is a great example. They don't even spell
all
Flickr
words
right.
That they made.
No,
up.
But Flickr is not really a word. It doesn't have an E.
That's my point.
Yeah, but everybody seems to know
the
that.
King, that's a real phrase.
And the person who actually
and there
has
are many kings around the world.
The person who actually has Flickr with an E, you know, they don't have anything on their site, and they could be making $1 million. You know, how many people do they think go to the wrong one? Yeah, it's amazing. So, yeah, you can come up with all kinds of crazy words and things, and it'll be remembered. Protecttheking.net. Okay, what else? Okay, talking about China. 8 parents and teachers who used high-tech equipment to help children cheat in Chinese college entrance exams have been sent to prison. They were given sentences of 6 months to 3 years after being found guilty of obtaining state secrets. State secrets, wow. One group of parents, some of them local officials, persuaded a teacher to fax them the questions once the exam got underway. They organized 6 university students to answer them. That's kind of a weird way of saying that sentence, and it comes from the BBC. They had organized 6 university students to answer them. They sent these answers using mobile phones to their children in the exam hall who were wearing tiny earpieces. Wow. Well, wait, how would that work? They sent text messages. Or they talk to them? I guess they talk to them on mobile phones, because you can't really hear a text message with earphones, can you?
Could be a voice synthesizer.
Another man had employed more high-tech equipment. He bribed the student taking the same exam as his son to get him the questions using a miniature scanner. He had 9 teachers on standby to answer them. He then transmitted the answers back to the 2 boys taking the exam. A 3rd scam involved a teacher at the school who had charged hundreds of dollars to get the answers to students, but whose equipment failed. The cheats were discovered when police nearby detected the efforts to transmit the answers to the students on their radios. Wow. In court, one of the fathers involved said they had high hopes for their children, and the exams were vital for them to secure good futures. So those of you trying to get into college now, you know, and you have parents that are really pushing you and willing to do anything, will they go this far? Will they actually risk going to prison to cheat to get you into the school of your choice? Well, apparently in China, there's a lot of people pushing for that entrance exam. Amazing.
Doesn't anyone just write the multiplication tables on their palm anymore?
Yeah, I never did that, actually.
Me either, but you would think.
Yeah, incredible. Yes, not Kevin.
What I want to know is, how is a test state secrets?
Anything in China tends to be a state secret if they want it to be. Yeah, a lot of fun. Okay, those of you flying, American Airlines is about to expand in-flight web access. Yeah, expanding internet access to about half its fleet of aircraft over the next 2 years as it attempts to raise revenue and improve customer service. The company said yesterday it will install flying Wi-Fi hotspots in about 300 planes used in the continental U.S. charge up to $12.95 for browsing the web, sending email, or connecting with corporate VPN sites. American has been testing in-flight internet service for several months on 15 planes. The airline declined to give figures on usage during the test, but an American technology executive called the response positive. American Airlines is a very financially driven airline. We are especially careful in how we're spending, but this is a good strategic investment, something our customers will value. I don't know. You think people will value using the internet on flights? I mean, I guess using the internet is different than using a cell phone, right?
I imagine.
I'm sorry, Bernie.
They're going to block voice over IP packets, so you can't have VoIP conversations like through Skype.
Oh, really?
They're going to block that, so you can't do that. I don't think the latency would have let it work anyway, but they specifically said they're not going to allow voice over IP. And I think for like flights under there's a I don't know if the article you're looking at has prices, but I think it was like $12.95 for under 2 hours. But if the trip is more than 2 hours, it's like more money.
It's $5.95 for some red eye flights, $7.95 using a handheld device, $9.95 using a laptop computer on a flight up to 3 hours, $12.95 for using a laptop on a longer flight. I suppose it's different prices depending on where you're going and what you're using.
They also plan to have like strict censorship policies on the on the traffic that goes through like just regular websites.
They're going to block pornographic sites. Yeah. They say at first the airline said they weren't going to do that, but they relented after hearing complaints from customers and flight attendants. I guess people were surfing porn on those 15 flights that they were testing. Yeah, there was a very loud chorus also telling us to not allow voice over IP calls in the cabin. So I guess that means cell phones probably would be a negative thing as well.
But if they're going to allow you to connect to things like corporate VPNs, what's stopping you from using the same functionality to connect to your own system at home, bounce the connection through that, and surf unfiltered?
I guess an angry crowd of passengers with torches and things that'll string you up right there. I don't know. And, of course, you can always pretend you're talking to somebody when you're not. That'll annoy people because they can't figure out how you did it.
You could pretend to be talking to somebody and pretend to be watching a porno at the same time.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Okay, what's happening over in the UK, our surveillance capital of the world? The government is backing a project to install a communication box in new cars to track the whereabouts of drivers anywhere in Europe. That's according to The Guardian. Under the proposals, vehicles will emit a constant heartbeat, revealing their location, speed, and direction of travel. The EU officials behind the plan believe it will significantly reduce road accidents, congestion, and privacy. No, I added that, but carbon emissions is the other thing they're saying. How's it going to reduce carbon emissions? Anybody have an idea as to how that's going to work, knowing where drivers are? Well, I guess maybe by telling them to go someplace else if everybody is going to the same place. Basically, the Guardian was given unpublished documents detailing the proposed uses for the system. They confirmed that it could have profound implications for privacy, enabling cars to be tracked to within a meter, more accurate than current satellite navigation technologies. The European Commission has asked governments to reserve radio frequency on the 5.9 gigahertz band, essentially setting aside a universal frequency on which this particular technology, known as Cooperative Video Infrastructure Systems, or CVIS, that technology will work on 5.9 gigahertz. They say there are no current plans to make installation of the technology mandatory. However, those involved in the project describe the UK as one of the main state backers. Transport for London has also hosted trials of the technology. You know, guys, I'm beginning to think that this is just going to be a given, that it's just pretty much like we have headlights in our cars. We're going to have tracking devices now, and you're going to have to jump through a whole lot of hoops to disable them. And if you don't have tracking enabled in your car, that's going to be a red flag right there. You pass a cop, he's going to say, wow, that person must be up to something. I can't track him. And we seem to be welcoming these innovations with open arms because, hey, they protect us. If our car gets stolen or if we're in trouble or we get, hijacked in our own car or something like that, then this is here to protect us. And we're all going around with our Android phones and our iPhones, knowing where we are to within a few inches, and we're happy about this. I don't know. Bernie, what do you think?
I think it's scary. Like you said, it's a double-edged sword. All these tracking and spying technology, all these technologies are always sugar-coated by the government agencies and corporations that really have ulterior motives. They want to, like, for instance, use your location to market stuff to you. Like if you are near a store, then they're going to send you marketing information because you're near that store.
Oh,
that they have a sale. I mean, there's this is not all good. I would think that you could try to, you know, if you're a good hacker, you could figure out ways to disable these tracking devices in your car, either by disabling the antenna or jamming the 5.6 gigahertz signal. I imagine there will be a cottage industry in people trying to jam these things once they become mandatory, but we'll block them some way. But it's going to be a challenge it's becoming a bigger and bigger challenge to protect your privacy about where you are and what you say.
It seems like this is another method of, like, trying to justify these tracking methods. It used to be only about security, but now it seems to be about green issues as well. Like, when New York City was trying to install cameras to track people's how often they came into the city by their license plate, they used green issues to justify it. So I think it's important that we, like, separate protecting the environment from while protecting our privacy. I don't think that one can be used to protect to justify the other.
No, we have a very limited system just like this already here.
Mm-hmm.
Easy Pass and all the other toll booth things, they do the exact same things, all
right,
on a limited scale.
Right. And Easy Pass actually has transponders in places you don't know where the transponders are. That's how they have these new signs up on Long Island that tell you what the traffic will be like for the next up until the next intersection or something like that. It'll say it'll take you about 8 minutes to get there. And they're getting that information by reading Easy Passes as they go by. So it's not just when you go through a toll that they read this information. They're taking it at all different times.
I know for a fact they actually have these receivers embedded in certain highways throughout the country to basically catch people speeding.
Yeah, yeah. And when I drive up tomorrow on the thruway, I might take an Easy Pass with me and go really, really fast and see if I get a ticket based on the Easy Pass. Of course, I could get pulled over just by a cop, for speeding. But if I get pulled over for the Easy Pass transponder, that'll be an interesting story to tell. I'm kidding.
The thing is that an Easy Pass is still detachable. You're allowed to take it off when you're not going through a toll bridge and put it in an ammo box or something,
mm-hmm,
so it can't be read.
Yes.
So you can't really do that if it's going to be a component of your car.
Exactly. If it's inside your car, you don't even know where it is. Now, get this. This is also kind of interesting. These things are going to talk to each other. The system allows cars to talk to one another and the road. Yeah, talk to the road. A communication box behind the dashboard ensures that cars send out heartbeat messages every 500 milliseconds through mobile, cellular, and wireless local area networks, short-range microwave, or infrared. Now, these messages will be picked up by other cars in the vicinity, allowing vehicles to warn each other if they are forced to brake hard or swerve to avoid a hazard. And that data is also picked up by detectors at the roadside and mobile phone towers, and that enables the road to communicate with cars, allowing for intelligent traffic lights to turn green when cars are approaching, or gantries on the motorway to announce changes to speed limits. What's a gantry? Does anybody know what that word is? This is from The Guardian in England, so of course they're going to have these crazy words I've never heard of, gantries. I guess it's like an entranceway or something. Data will also be sent to control centers that manage traffic, enabling a vastly improved system to monitor and even direct vehicles. I mean, all that sounds great. How many times have we been stuck at stupid traffic lights that turn red when nobody's around? It would be nice to have traffic lights that actually work where you can simply keep going based on how many cars are on the road. But the privacy issues, wow, they're pretty scary. You know, just knowing where you are at all times. And eventually, yes, this will become mandatory. There's no question about that. Bernie, any chance we can fight this somehow?
Well, like I said, a good hacker can figure out a way as Rob pointed out, shield your device so you only use it where you absolutely have to use it. I still prefer to use cash instead of Easy Pass. I'd rather wait a minute in line than have my whereabouts tracked. But it's going to get harder and harder. Hey, we should talk about the North Korean communication satellite.
Yes, tell us all about that, Bernie.
Well, the KCNA, not a radio station, it's the Korean Central News Agency, reported that the North Korean government, the NPRK, successfully launched a communication satellite into orbit a couple of days ago. This has been in the news for the past couple of weeks. North Korea was saying they were going to do this, and all the other countries were up in arms saying, hey, this is really just a thinly veiled missile test to test a new ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missile platform. But North Koreans swore, no, this is just for space research, a communication satellite. So they said they launched it, and it was bugged, and it was in orbit. There it is.
I'm sorry, Bernie, that's my fault. I just added somebody. Apparently, has a lot of noise going on where they are right now. Bernie, is there anything else you have to say about the North Korean satellite?
Supposedly, it was broadcasting
Hang on a second. Hang on. I gotta deal with this. That happens sometimes. Go ahead, Bernie.
According to the Korean Central News Agency, their satellite was broadcasting a music on 470 megahertz, which is a common UHF frequency. I don't know the exact song, but it was a song singing the praises of Kim Jong-il and science.
They all sing the praises of Kim Jong-il.
Yes.
And Kim Il-sung.
And but I listened. I got out my radio equipment, my ham radio equipment, and I listened to 470 megahertz, and I left it on with a tape recorder by my window for like 24 hours because I didn't know what the orbital the Keplerian elements of this satellite were, so I didn't know how often it passed overhead. I assumed it wasn't geosynchronous if it even did make it into launch, and I didn't hear a single thing on 470 megahertz. I was really disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have been a hoax. It could have been that it really was an ICBM launching platform, and they just said it was a satellite thing. And 10 years ago, back in 98, the North Koreans supposedly launched another satellite. It was another rocket they set off, and they said that was an attempt to do a satellite. And that was broadcasting supposedly on 27 megahertz, which is in the CB radio band of all places.
Yeah, that's kind of a strange place to do that.
But nobody ever heard that signal either. So either they're just not very good at launching satellites, or they're just using that as a thinly veiled disguise for launching other nastier things.
Well, you probably didn't hear because the rocket launch was not successful, according to NORAD, which says the payload exploded and dropped into the South Pacific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably why. Okay, listen, joining us now on the phone is Laszlo, you there?
I'm here.
Okay, there was a bit of noise on your end before when I added you, so hopefully that's gone now. But Laszlo, you're the person responsible for starting a panic last week when we went country for about 20 minutes at the beginning of our April Fool's show, and we all want to thank you for that.
Oh, sure. There was actually a couple of us. A friend of mine, Jeff Berlin, who's a voice guy. He's the voice of about 60 radio stations nationwide, and he's also the voice of several TV networks. And I told him about it, and he knows about BAI going way back, and so he provided the voice and some of the production, and I did some of the production as well. And I had to go to the Billboard Top 100 and find out what the top 5 country songs were, and then I actually had to go purchase them, which I felt really odd, purchasing such horrible pop country music. But they sang about trucks and daddies. It was phenomenal.
I can't get those songs out of my head either. They really stick with you. And for those people who did not hear this, it's available on our archive. If you go to www.2600.com/offthehook and simply click on our April 1st, 2009 show, you'll be able to hear just what happened at 7 p.m. last week. And it really was very convincing, very believable. It sounded just like something that would happen. And it's also incredible to me because we learned so much about how easy it is really to program one of those radio stations, because there's no real human involved. It's just basically a lot of hype-sounding announcements and a bunch of sound effects and music, and you don't really need to have anybody in the station, do you?
No, and what's interesting, I think one of the reasons that it was so believable that BAI had, you know, suddenly switched to country is that stations nationwide have been flipping formats, most notably that CBS stations here in New York, K-Rock flipped, and I mean, it was just same kind of thing, just out of the blue, they switch formats completely. They go DJ-less, and they play, you know, 10,000 songs in a row, they say. And basically what's happening is they've ruined radio so much, and they're going broke because nobody wants to advertise on their commercial stations.
Right.
So they fire all the talent, and they basically just make a glorified iPod with a transmitter and put it on shuffle and then pay somebody $30,000 a year to sort of jump in and give the weather and
they don't even do that live. That's something, and they're not even in the city. They pretend to be in the city sometimes, but they're not actually there at all.
Yeah, Clear Channel pioneered that. A friend of mine is he does 7 DJ shifts a day for different cities, and he just sits in a dark room and he does a radio show. He does some of them simultaneously, and you just record it and, you know, upload it, and the computer drops it in between songs. But yeah, I was really happy with how that came out. In fact, my friend Jeff contacted a guy that does production for country radio stations,
uh-huh.
And that's how we got those artist drops, where it's like, hi, I'm Shania Twain, hi, I'm Brooks and Dunn, you know?
Yeah, really, it was scary. But the thing is, you mentioned it's like an iPod on shuffle. I think this actually went a step beyond that, because I heard like actual announcements of the artists I was playing. I heard the announcement say Toby Keith, and they would play a Toby Keith song. Do stations even do that? Do they even like make a reference to the song they're playing?
Yeah, they do. But a lot of times they'll do that. They'll just get the voice guy to, you know, say a bunch of the artist's names and songs, and then they just have that play right before the song. That way they don't have to deal with a DJ. But, mm-hmm. I mean, this is happening nationwide where, you know, stations are flipping formats. Many have been flipping formats, you know, almost every 6 months.
Yeah.
I think it's actually kind of positive because, you know, you told me shortly after you played this April Fool's spoof that, mm-hmm. I mean, people were really losing it. They really believed it.
Well, it's kind of interesting, too, because, and this is almost not funny, right afterwards we got word that Pacifica was changing the locks at the transmitter room here at WBAI, or at the Empire State Building. And at first I thought that was an extension of this, or maybe that it was because of this or something like that. But no, basically all kinds of things happen in the radio world, and there's all kinds of talk around here of changes and things like that, and maybe some good, maybe some bad, but we're still here for now. But the point is, you have to be vigilant. You have to be careful. Listeners have to get involved and know what's happening and be educated and involved and make this place the best it can possibly be, because we're still humans here. But this kind of station that you're describing, the kind of station that we had for 20 minutes last week, how much space does that actually take up? I mean, literally, can you do it on an iPod, or do you need something a little bit more than that? Can it be done in a single little room? How much space do you need?
Oh, yeah. I mean, most radio stations are now in what's called clusters, which I always like the word that follows the word cluster. But
yes.
So they're in clusters, and so there's seven or eight stations, and each station is basically a little smaller or about the size of the studio you're sitting in. And all you need is, you know, a computer with a decent-sized hard drive to hold the music, and you buy the software, and it interfaces with the computer that you upload the commercials to. And, you know, most radio stations now in a lot of markets are run literally by two people.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised they're run by that many or a person at all. Well, I mean, you don't need people. You just need a computer can do all this. You just record the voice once. It's there forever. And you just play the same songs over and over again. And that's the other thing. You know, there are stations in this city and in every city that keep playing the same songs from 1973. Never stops. Never gets anywhere. I mean, they're good songs, but there are so many good artists out there and so much variety, and not just in this culture, but in so many other cultures. We could be learning from that. Imagine if there were more stations like ours around just in New York, how much we'd all benefit from that. I think we actually get richer by having more alternative programming out there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, hopefully, you know, hearing that and the station possibly switching to a country format encouraged a few people to join BAI and kick in a few extra bucks. But, you know, you're right. If you look at the programming on this station, and then you travel to, like, for instance, I was just doing a bunch of radio interviews in around England, and the stations there are so diverse, mm-hmm. and they have so many different shows and so many different opinions and kinds of music on one station, on commercial stations.
Wow.
And it's really refreshing to see a place that's getting radio partially right, where we have worked so hard to get it wrong here in the United States.
Would it be so bad if I mean, I'm not in favor of new laws and regulations, but let's just consider this for a second. If there was a regulation that said a radio station had to be run by a live human being, and they had to make live announcements of whatever it is that they're doing. There had to be somebody in the studio at all times, not just simply playing a satellite or playing a tape or playing a computer or something like that. Do you think that would be a bad thing?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, a lot of the laws that were set up to sort of protect us from the media monopolies that we have now were really whittled down. I mean, you know, when I first got into radio, you had to prove to the FCC that you were somehow doing something for the public good. So you had to run, you know, sort of local shows about local issues. You know, a lot of stations would try to bury them on Sunday mornings. You had to run, you know, a certain number of free PSAs. But you've seen all these things, you know, like equal time and the laws that stations had to actually, you know, benefit the community and people as a whole. They've sort of thrown that all out the window. So now you've just got, you know, the monotony of a station that's playing the same 10 songs over and over, or TV stations and TV networks where it's just, you know, we figured out what our demographic is, and it's angry liberals or it's angry Republicans or conservatives, and we're just going to talk specifically to those people. And
yeah,
the public interest has not helped in that at all.
No, but the thing is, a lot of the public says they don't want to hear this kind of, they just want to hear their favorite songs. But I think in this day and age of the internet and little devices you carry around with you, you can have that. You can have your iPod on shuffle. You can carry it with you. But for actual radio serving the public, that should be local. That should be live. That should be something that offers more than just random songs being played, the same thing over and over again. I mean, we all have the capacity of doing that. So why not use the public airwaves for something a bit more educational and constructive, right?
Absolutely.
Bernie, go ahead.
I just want to say, hi, Laz. How you doing?
Hi.
I just wanted to say that the low-power FM station class that the service that the FCC approved about 10 years ago by popular demand, actually, but popular uprising, does have a requirement that these low-power 10 or 100-watt stations must have all locally, not only must they be owned and operated by a nonprofit organization, they must have only locally produced programming. I mean, they can play music and stuff, they have to have local content as far as if you're talking about something, has to be done locally by a local person about local topics. And I think there should be a percentage, I think there should be an FCC regulation that a certain percentage of programming in any given market has to be locally produced.
Wouldn't that be cool, though, if there's a station that, a music station, but they simply played music from the tri-state area, from the area that their transmitter reached. So you turned on a particular commercial station, you heard progressive rock or whatever is fashionable these days, but it was only from people, bands that were in this particular area. And, I would extend this to all sorts of things. I think baseball teams should only have people who live in the area, that come from the area, on their teams. It encourages a sense of regionalism and healthy competitiveness and things like that. I don't want to talk about sports again. We did that last week, too. But it's just new ideas. Instead of having the same sound, and I know when I travel in the next few days, a couple of weeks, actually, I'm going to be hearing radio stations that sound exactly the same. I won't be able to tell where I am based on those particular stations. Unless I listen to the non-commercial stations, they're all going to sound the same. And that's sad. It shouldn't be that way.
Well, and I think this is there's a light at the end of the tunnel here, and that is these stations, these corporations paid a ton of money for all these signals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as soon as the deregulation happened, they spent a ton of money buying up all those stations. Then the iPod and satellite radio came out. And you know, most radio stocks are in the toilet right now, and mm-hmm. some have been literally kicked off of the stock exchange for being so low for so long. Cumulus got kicked off. You know, it's been devalued so much that I think that the opportunity now is for people to come in who are genuinely interested in radio and serving communities and towns are going to be, you know, picking these stations up for really cheap prices. And
I think it'd be a great tax write-off for Clear Channel or one of those other companies to simply donate a radio station, a full-power radio station, to a community, and then the community can put out real radio, and you won't have the same music box that's pervading the airwaves, and you have some diversity. If they did that all over the country, then radio would become alive again. There's no reason a station like this should feel the effects of the internet or of iPods or things like that, because what we offer is a completely different sound and something that makes you think. And that's always going to be in demand. But that's also why we have to be very careful not to lose this place to country music or sports talk or anything like that. All right.
Well, yeah, I mean, Clear Channel's been shedding stations, and the rumor is CBS is in, you know, they just fired all their top talent nationwide just so they can take a write-off. I would not doubt if they get rid of their stations as well.
Well, you know, anyone wants to donate radio stations, you can contact us, oth@2600.com. No, we won't run the station, but we'll contact the other people in various cities that we think will do a good job with them. So many people out there really want to get involved in radio, but how do they do that? You know, if they're not allowed inside the door, people who will volunteer their time to keep stations going. It's a passion. It's an art form, and there's so much material that could be shared. You hear the same things over and over again on commercial radio stations. Why do you think that is? Who picks the material? You know, it's not us. It's not the programmers, because they're not programmers. They're simply on-air voices, if they're even that much, and they do what the computer tells them or what the executives tell them. It's sad. doesn't have to be this way. I think as technology moves forward, businesses have to adjust the way they do things. Record companies, newspapers, radio stations, television stations, movie industry, all of that. All has to change. So radio is one example of that. And I think, Laszlo, what we did last week was sort of point that out. Point out how valuable and unique WBAI actually is. And
I think my favorite story you told me is when you were playing that, you know, we produced like a 20-minute segment of country music songs with country music production in between, and you said somebody called the phones there, and you answered Country 99.5, and then there was a pause, and then somebody said, oh, no.
Yeah, it was a good pause. It was like, what, Dot Red, did you take that call?
Oh, yeah.
You went above and beyond the call of duty here, because I didn't really think people would be answering the phones in the other room. For some reason, the phones in the tally room are ringing. We weren't even taking tally calls.
Those were the only numbers they
had, I guess. Well, this phone, the phone here, our main switchboard, it was packed throughout the entire 20-minute period. Everybody was calling. At first, it started with a few, and it just kept getting bigger and bigger. It did not stop once. You found phones ringing in another part of the studio, and yeah, people wanted to know what was going to happen with their premiums. Of course, they always want to know that. and what's going to happen with the radio station. The thing is, it's believable, because in this time of economic strife, it's entirely possible that we could lose this place, or any radio station could be lost. And it would just be an incredible bad stroke of luck for that to happen to us. Just that what I think is a renaissance in the radio world for creative, non-commercial radio. So let's hope that never happens. And, you know, it was an April Fool's joke what we did, but it was also kind of, I think, a learning experience for a lot of people. And hopefully our listeners will be reinvigorated by that. And what happened afterwards with Pacifica, I think, is also a wake-up call. We all have to get involved and make this place thrive. Not just survive, but thrive. All right. We're just about out of time. But, Laszlo, we all want to thank you for the mischief. And thanks everybody else who worked on that. It's great how radio people sort of come together, non-commercial, commercial. We all sort of know how the game is played, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it was fun to do something like that, because this work in radio has been fired because some dumb corporation decided to switch formats and get rid of everybody, and inevitably they end up with worse ratings than they had before.
Absolutely, they don't know how to run their business model at all. Okay, we are out of time. I want to remind folks one more time, if you're looking for those autographed copies of the Best of 2600 book, the collector's edition, you won't get any more collectible than this. Micro Center has a bunch in their Columbus, Ohio store, but if you're not in Columbus, Ohio, it'd be more convenient for you to go online. All you have to do is go to microcenter.com and enter the special hacker code of 026666, and then an autographed copy of the book will be sent your way. That simple. All right, we're out of time. We'll be back next week. I'll be somewhere else for Kim Il-sung's birthday next Wednesday. I'm not sure where exactly I'll be, but I'll be phoning in my appearance. And you can write to us, oth@2600.com. Till then, another song about phones. Good night.
Oh, my girlfriend has a mobile phone. Now we can never have a minute alone. The other night I asked her for a kiss. She said, hang on now till I answer this. Oh, this mobile phone, it is a curse, and it makes an awful hole in her purse. With her mobile phone, she gets such a thrill, but her smile disappears when she gets the bill. Oh, my dear friend has a mobile phone. Now we can never have a minute alone. The other night I asked her for a kiss. She said, hang on now till I answer this. On Sunday it rang in the middle of mass, and all the children thought it was great gas. Some people thought it was the Angelus, but the priest on the altar was furious. Oh, my girlfriend has a mobile phone. Now we can never have a minute alone. The other night I asked her for a kiss. She said, hang on now till I answer this. Last week I was putting her in me car, and she was letting me go too far. The next thing her mobile phone did ring, just as I was about to put me hand on her. If you're
looking for a girlfriend. Now you see, my advice to you would be, if the girl that you fancy has a mobile phone, don't bother about her, just leave her alone. Oh, my girlfriend has a mobile phone, now we can never have a minute alone. The other night I asked her for a kiss, she said, hang on now till I answer this. Oh, my girlfriend has a mobile phone, now we can never have a minute alone. The other night I asked her for a kiss, she said, hang on now till I answer this.
Hello, is that Finna 2222?
No, this is Finna 2222.
I'm sorry for getting out of the bed.
I sure I had to come down and answer the phone anyway.
Oh, boy. All right, songs about telephones. These guys are off the hook, I tell you.